I'm Beatie Cohn-Vredos, and welcome, welcome again to the Ask Beatie Show. And believe me, my friends, the Beatles are not the only people these days who are needing help and who are asking for help. Look at what is going on in our country today, politically, economically, concerns about healthcare, racism, mental health, or should I say lack of mental health accessibility. You know, and I was reading studies over the weekend, the rates of depression, according to a number of studies, are more than threefold than what they were during and before the pandemic. Lower income people having less than $5,000 in savings and having exposure to more stressors were associated with greater risk of depression and, of course, also of catching the virus. People, I hear this in my practice. I hear this from friends, from family, the concerns. Am I going to be able to pay my rent? What's happening with my job? Am I going to lose my job? I've been home now for months and months. I'm lucky. I'm fortunate that I'm still getting a salary. I miss the socialization. I miss seeing people. I miss going out. I'm so at loose ends and concerned about contracting the virus. And for business owners, you know, every single Monday, I have an opportunity actually to see my chiropractor. I injured myself a number of months ago on the tennis court. And fortunately, I am feeling much, much, much better. But I see all the vacant stores, the for rent signs, the out of business signs. And this, of course, is in New York City. And what we're seeing now is an uptick, not a downtick, of what's going on with COVID-19. People are still so concerned. And we are seeing whether or not it's President Trump and all of the different people that are surrounding him and enabling him and his sycophants. But putting all that aside, I mean, people are getting sick. And of course, there's the real concern about health insurance and the stimulus. People, I know a number of people who did not receive their unemployment insurance and were waiting and hoping that there was going to be a stimulus package. And of course, that too is still up in the air. And of course, the concern, are we somehow going to be continuing on like this for months? And some experts are saying that it could last, the pandemic and the fears surrounding the pandemic could last for years. Am I going to need to apply for unemployment insurance? And am I even going to be receiving the unemployment checks, as so many people that I know have not, they were entitled to, but have not yet received their checks, and they're barely able to manage. And look at what is happening with schools. One day we hear the schools are opening, then we hear the schools are closing, then we hear that the children are going to be going part-time. Some of the schools are going to be going full-time, and then there are changes. And parents are in a real, real bind, particularly parents who still have to work outside of their homes. There's the concern about childcare. First, we were told that the children were not at risk for getting COVID-19. Now we are told that they are at risk. So it is a crazy, crazy, crazy time for all of us. And statistics are showing that the self-help lines, the hotlines calls are surging. And of course, I see that as something that is very, very positive, that people are really giving themselves permission, that they do not need to navigate this very tough and very challenging terrain on their own. 50% of people are now working from home. And I hear from friends, and I'm hearing from my patients how anxious and disconnected that people are feeling. We can't hug our family. We can't even really see our family. And for people who've been listening to the show for the last number of years, in fact, today is the 15th Ask BD show here on the Progressive Radio Network. I was someone who said, listen, minimize the amount of time that you spend on Skype and on Zoom and on the computer. But this has now become one of our only options. I mean, I haven't seen a live patient since March. All of my therapy is on Zoom, and all of my therapy is on Skype. And do I feel that it is as terrific as it is having people come to my office and seeing people live and just sitting in a room and having that face-to-face personal connection? Of course it's not. And yet we've all had to really adjust. And I think that this is just the beginning where we are all having to adjust to a new reality. Again, I'm hearing this and I'm reading this, that there has been a substantial increase in alcohol. In fact, alcohol use has jumped about 75%, wine 66%. In fact, there was a piece in the New York Times yesterday in the style section, and it was an article on parents, particularly mothers who were conversing with other mothers. And they were saying that one of the greatest things that they look forward to at the end of the day is having some wine and having some pot. Of course, this is not anything at all that that I would recommend. And of course, this all doesn't even take into consideration all of the issues that people were having pre-pandemic. Look at the divorce rate. The divorce rate, first marriage is 48%, second marriage is 67%, 74% of couples who are marrying for the third time, they too end up in the divorce court. And all of the stressors have not necessarily caused, but have certainly exacerbated all of the pre-COVID stresses that people are dealing with and have been dealing with for quite some time. Suicide statistics, just prior to the Ask BD show today, I was online just looking to see what was happening in terms of statistics and suicide statistics. And unfortunately, they too are going up. So what do we need to do? What are some of the best ways that we can cope? Because we have to cope. We do not have options to just sort of let ourselves go and just give up. You know, I use the analogy as a competitive tennis player that when things get down, when we get down, we need to come up with some new strategies. And we know that there are many, many things that we can do, including reaching out and asking for good help, that we can do every single day to help us cope, to help us better cope with the anxiety and the depression and the stress that most of us are facing. I know that for myself, I'm in a very fortunate position because when I feel upset, I'm able to sit down with my husband, Jim, and I'll joke with him and I'll say, listen, do you have 15 minutes for some therapy for me today? Because it's really, really important to have people, whether or not it's family or friends, and if need be, professionals, where you are able to express the full gamut of emotion that you are feeling, the scare, the anger, the stress, the depression, the anxiety. And then, of course, when things start to feel really, really out of control, then it is time, my friends, to reach out to a professional. But of course, there are a lot of other things that we need to do as well. And of course, exercise, and you hear me saying this every single week, the importance of exercise, not just so that our bodies are going to be more toned and we're going to be able to lose excess weight or fat, but the exercise does amazing things to our endorphins. And I don't know, frankly, what I would have done throughout my life if I didn't have exercise as a way of helping me deal with life changes and challenge and stressors. So think about it. Let us differentiate between the things that we can control and the things that we cannot, and we actually need to know the difference. We cannot control whether or not President Trump is going to stay in the hospital or not. We cannot control what is eventually going to happen in terms of hopefully president being reinstated. Of course, we need to vote and we need to take on our citizenship to make sure that we are actually doing our own fair share. But what we can do is we can eat well. And as Gary Nell tells us every single day, we can have plant-based diets. We can have fruits and vegetables and grains. We can find a way to interact and socialize, even if it means socializing on Zoom or Skype. We can find a way to make sure that we're going to be getting sufficient sleep, and if we're lucky, to be able to take some naps here and there. We can find a way to meditate. Now, I know myself, I have never meditated in my life. And these days, I've actually gone to the computer to try to learn what one must do if you are going to think about meditating. We can take baths. We can take showers that will help us to relax. We also can make sure that we have supportive people in our life, and we can eliminate toxins, chemical toxins, and we also can eliminate toxic people who do not respect us, who are critical, and who make us crazy. These are things that we have control over, and these are things that we actually can do. We can do positive visualization. I know a couple of days ago, I was feeling a little blah, and I was thinking about some childhood memories. And my late father, he used to take me to this beautiful, beautiful lake. I think we were probably the only two people at this lake. And this was in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, many, many, many years ago. And I remember it was beautiful and the sun was shining and it was hot. It was picture perfect. And I was able to actually bring up some of those wonderful, wonderful memories that I shared with my dad. And it did make a difference in my mood. We can listen to music and dance if we are so inclined to dance. We can also drink herbal teas, which do tend to calm us down when we're feeling stressed. We can also use essential oils and aromatherapy. And what I find too, and of course I oftentimes give my patients this kind of homework, is to journal. And if you don't have somebody who you can talk to and really be authentic with, you can then journal and at least find a way to have an outlet to get your feelings out. And of course, one of my personal biases, because I've always had dogs, is to get a dog. I mean, it is wonderful, wonderful to be able to wake up every day. And when you go out, to be welcomed by our dog is Cha-Cha. And it makes a difference in the world to be able to walk the dog. And even though we are all wearing masks and hopefully are keeping our 6 foot plus social distance, that we're at least able to communicate with other people who are outside and who are also walking their dogs. So in the old days, and when I say the old days, pre-March, pre the pandemic, I would talk about minimizing social media, minimizing cell phones and computers. Well, at this point, I think each of us actually do need to find a balance, since the social media and the Zoom and the computers and the Skype and the cell phones are really, for many, many people, the only way that we are actually able to communicate and stay at least somewhat connected to people who we care about and to the outside world. Well, I have a guest today, and she is actually the perfect guest, because when we're talking about the need to reach out and touch someone and ask for help, Alyssa Pettersell is the perfect person who we are going to be talking to in a couple of minutes. But the reason why I chose the matchmaking song from Fiddler on the Roof as an intro to introducing Alyssa is that Alyssa is a matchmaker. Only she doesn't match people who are looking for love. She matches patients, prospective patients, and therapists who can work together. So let's listen to an upbeat song, Matchmaker, Matchmaker, from my most favorite Broadway show, Fiddler on the Roof, and then we are going to have a terrific discussion with Alyssa Pettersell by hiring a matchmaker. But if you are looking to find a really terrific, terrific therapist, there is nobody else around that I can more highly recommend than my guest, Alyssa Pettersell, who is the founder and CEO of My Wellbeing. So, Alyssa, welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show.
Thank you so much, Beattie. It's good to be here. How are you?
So, I want people to know a little bit about you, and then, of course, I have a million questions, and I know that my listeners do as well, that we will be able to discuss. Well, you are the CEO of My Wellbeing, where you and your team, and this is interesting, connect people with the right therapist while also helping therapists to build and manage their businesses and professional community. So people might say, well, what does she know about matching therapists with patients? But you have a master's of social work degree from NYU. You're also a writer and a therapist. And, you know, in just doing some research about you, you were named, and this is so impressive, one of Crain's New York Business Notable Women in Healthcare in 2019, and is recognized as one of Built in New York's 50 startups to watch. And what I found also really interesting was that you have already helped over 20,000 people find the right therapist, and that you've been featured in Forbes, Allure, Cosmopolitan, The Huffington Post, Glamour, and more. So you are doing a really, really wonderful service to people looking for therapists and therapists who are wanting to build their practices. So you've done so much in such a short period of time. How did this all begin for you, Alyssa?
That's a great question. And thank you so much for the warm introduction. I really appreciate it. And I know your listeners are so appreciative of you and all you do. So a huge thank you to you already. And great question. I mean, I, as you mentioned, am trained as a social worker. And it really, I identify as someone who's been recovering from perfectionism for probably at least 10 years. I've probably had perfectionism for my whole life. And I didn't really take my own therapist search as seriously as I should have until I started training as a therapist myself. And at that point, I knew that I didn't want to be working with other people as clients if I never really sat in the client's chair on the couch. And I learned the hard way that I had to look through tons and tons of headshot and bio combinations on these open directories on Psychology Today and Google. And even when I got warm referrals, it was pretty rare that I'd make contact and exchange a phone call or exchange an email with a therapist. And more often than not, their caseload was full or they weren't the right fit. So I happened to be looking proactively, and I'm a pretty determined person. So I kept looking and eventually found a really great fit. And over the past handful of years, I've worked with about three different therapists who I've come to really, really appreciate and adore. And I've grown so much as a result. And all the while, I became a therapist. And I found that people would find me and find my practice. And sometimes the things that they would want to work through were not things that I had explicit expertise in. So I work really well with entrepreneurs and founders. I work really well with young adults coping with anxiety and burnout. If and when clients would come to me who were hoping to work through an eating disorder or an addiction, I believe that ethically it's my responsibility to connect them with someone who had significantly more training in those areas, because those happen to be areas where there are diversified techniques where when someone does have expertise in that area, the work can be really different. So that said, having that conversation with clients is really hard, because if you connect on an emotional level and someone on the other side, the client going to therapy, has the courage and the vulnerability to say, I need help, to reach out for help and to really share their story, the last thing you want to do as the therapist is to send them away, because emotionally it's a rejection and it doesn't feel good. It really doesn't feel good for either side. And between all of those experiences, I really believe that there is a better way. And I was really surprised that as someone I identify as within the millennial demographic and as someone who uses technology for almost everything, I found it really hard to believe that there wasn't a better way to find someone. There wasn't a way that was more personalized and more reliable. So I set out to make one. And that now, that was about 3.5 years ago. So since then, as you mentioned, we've matched more than 20,000 people. We've been featured in and had conversations with a whole host of media outlets and brands. And what's probably the most powerful is the feedback that we get from therapists and providers who we work with and clients who we work with when they share that they're either entering into therapy for the first time or they're seeing someone new, and the experience they're having from the get-go is one that's warmer and more connected than they'd experienced before. And they feel renewed optimism about not just finding someone, but then ultimately feeling better, feeling stronger, and feeling like they're growing.
Well, I must admit that, I had my profile on Psychology Today for probably over 20 years. And I think that there are probably thousands of therapists on the site. And I think the whole thing seemed to me to be completely absurd. That, can you imagine somebody, looking for therapy? As you say, they now look at videos and everybody's profile basically sounds the same. Or when you look at the ads, on Talkspace with Michael Phelps, who is their spokesperson. I mean, it sounds like one big ad, and somebody who is really serious and looking for therapy, at least what I have found, they really don't know what to look for. They are, how can they possibly be familiar with a process? They're scared. Mm-hmm. they're vulnerable and they need the personal touch. And something else that I am going to share with my audience is that up until COVID-19, I would say that 95% of all of my referrals came from doctors and lawyers and people who I treated who referred their friends and family. But there was a change that happened in March. And by some, maybe it was kind of a meant to be thing with you, Alyssa, that you emailed me. I had absolutely no idea who you were. I had no idea about your company. And I remember sitting in our backyard in East Hampton, and you and I, we had a long conversation about your company. And I was thinking, gee, I have never been a part of a company where a company would be referring to me. But there was something about you. You were not selling. You appeared to be honest and genuine, and I liked the process. I liked what you had to say. So I was one of the therapists who actually signed up, and I can't even begin to tell you how pleased and happy I am, and hopefully the people who are working with me are as well, with the process that you have put together to match therapists and patients. So, I'm speaking now as somebody who is really a part of your organization. This is not an infomercial. This is not a commercial. I am not being paid. You are not being paid to come on the show. But I thought that it's something that is so valuable for people to know about. And, you know, one of the things that, I was wondering was, how do prospective clients or patients find my well-being?
It's a great question. And the answer is pretty eclectic. And it changes actually week by week, season by season. We're really agile and about meeting people where they are. And what I'll say is, a lot of the conversations we have spark further conversations. So there's a little bit of, in startup land, what's called a network effect, where we'll have a really great experience with someone who's looking for a therapist, and then they might tell three of their friends, who might tell three of their coworkers, who might tell their parents and their significant others. So there's some of that. There's some word of mouth growth. And there's also, we've created a bit of a community on our social media platforms and through some of the written content that we do. So through some blogging and through some of our email newsletters, where part of our goal is to have conversations about mental health that are real. So I know that might sound simple or obvious at face value, but one of the issues that I had with the mental health space as I was getting more and more involved in it a couple of years ago before starting my well-being was that it felt like conversations were either really bubblegum and rainbows of, or if you just change the way you think and everything will be fine. Or look at the glass half full and you won't feel so bad anymore. Or they went 180 and said, there's an image of animated woman sitting and crying in the corner of a dark room looking at the floor. And it's like, well, while some bubblegum and rainbow perspectives are important, and while some feelings and experiences and situations absolutely feel existentially like the world is ending, there's so much in between. And there's so much that blends the two. And one minute things feel really threatening, and the next minute things feel okay. And we really wanted to get into the nuance and the authenticity of that. So focusing on that in our social media and our content has really resonated with a new generation of people who are really hoping to, yes, work through really life-threatening situations and high trauma, but also work through their day-to-day and try to gain more meaning and make more sense of their job and their relationships and their identity and a lot of the current events that are happening in the world. So that's resonated. And of course, we now have a team of about 5 full-time. And about a year and change ago, we hired our head of growth, who's a really exceptional marketer. And she is laser focused on all things paid and unpaid advertising. So we do have ads on Google, ads on social media, in addition to our content, which is more quote unquote organic or free. And it's a combination of all of those things that really continues to increase the amount of people that we're chatting with day by day.
So let me ask, let's say somebody is going through, as I've been talking with a number of people through my well-being, through divorce, depression, infidelity, early child sexual abuse issues that have not up to this point been dealt with. So they find you, and it sounds like they can find you in a number of different ways, and they make that initial difficult call. And I want people to know that if you find that it's difficult, if you're scared, it is perfectly normal to be feeling that way. So, okay, they find you, they make the phone call, Alyssa, and then what happens? Who is on the other end of the phone? Who does the intake, questions? Take us through the process of the patient who's in a really bad way, having the chutzpah and the courage to make that initial phone call.
Yeah, absolutely. So also a great question. If anyone is looking in partnership with a loved one or their place of work, they might actually hear about us through someone else, so they may already have more information. If someone is reaching out, they saw us on social media or they heard about us on this radio conversation, if they come to our website, for example, they would learn more about how our process works. And it actually starts online. It starts before a phone call, where they share information about what are they looking for ideally in their mental health care. So some of this information is logistical. They might share the fee they're able to afford, and we share some information about what ranges and what fee amounts are normal or within average ranges for a given zip code. They might share when they're available, so during traditional working hours, after work hours, on a weekday, on weekends. We also ask about identity information like age and gender and race, because more and more and more that information is really important to people who are looking for a space where they can feel safe and be vulnerable. We ask about style in a way that is pretty untraditional. So we remove all jargon and all acronyms from the conversation, and instead we help people gauge, are you hoping for someone who's going to be really action-oriented and or really engaged and really hands-on in session and between session? And the client has an opportunity to say, yes, I want this so much. This is the exact type of thing I want. Or they can say, I don't want this at all. This is not resonating. Or they can say something in between. So we ask about goal-oriented. We ask about mind-body connection. Are they interested in having breathing exercises in session? Are they holding or feeling a lot of stress in their physical body? We ask about relational styles or relational patterns. So do they want to dig into, this might be especially helpful for things like divorce or family dynamics, to see, well, what might you be used to from years ago that you're still holding on to? What are you envisioning for years ahead that you want to start to manifest? And then we also ask about technique or issue areas or expertise. So similar to the example I gave of if a client was coming to me hoping to work through an eating disorder and that wasn't my expertise, through something like My Well-Being, we would have never been matched in the first place, because the client would have shared, yeah, I'm really hoping to work through an eating disorder or OCD, and they would specifically be matched with providers who share that that is their training and their expertise. So we ask clients as well what their order of preference or order of needs of those various things are. And then with all of that information, we follow up with the client and we share with them 3 providers who we think, based on all of that information, are likely to be a really strong fit for them. And we encourage the client to schedule a phone consultation with the provider directly so that both sides have a chance to speak briefly and to get to know, just a pulse check does this person feel like a strong connection? Do I want to go and book that first appointment? And for both sides, it's a chance to gauge fit. So,
you know, I have found it actually to be extremely, extremely helpful. And I've been doing is I've been Zooming. And so people have had an opportunity to, you know, to see me and for me to see them and to have a really substantial intake consultation. And by the end of, let's say, 25 minutes, I've been finding that for me, I've been, you know, spending close to 25 or even 30 minutes because I wanted the people and, you know, myself as well to be pretty sure about, you know, were we going to connect? I wanted people to know about me. And I'll tell you a very interesting aside. One woman who was a match. In fact, I think she was matched. I was her number one match. She was really, really not thrilled that I was in the media and that I was an author and that I had a book and that I had a radio show. And that was really important to find out that when we had our Zoom interview, I could see that those were problems for her. So I actually wrote her back and I said, listen, I had, you know, a question. Was there something about what happened during our conversation, our Zoom conversation, that may have made you feel uncomfortable? Because I picked it up immediately. Now, most people who go to my website and they see all the different things that I've done, they see that as an additional resource, the book, the speaking, the writings. But here was someone who felt very put off by the fact that I was a published author and was in television and radio. And it was good to know, though, Alyssa, before of we course. Started. And before she or I invested any time and you know, money in, you know, in moving
forward. No, that makes so much sense. And that's so interesting because you're exactly right. Had you had a full session or had you, if we were outside of COVID circumstances, met in person and commuted and all of these things, it would have probably been more frustrating for both of you, I'd imagine. So how much better to have the chance to really air some of that proactively? Or that's our thinking. That's the idea.
So the people who are filling out the online questionnaires, I mean, it sounds like they have to at least initially be pretty invested in this process because the questions are very detailed. It's time consuming. And then they need to talk to, you know, one of your staff about the possibilities of moving forward.
Yes. So they express interest and they share some more of what they're looking for. And then they're expressing, so basically they can move forward. They don't actually, so having a phone call with anyone on our team is optional. Many people prefer to communicate by email because what we noticed actually, this is probably within our first year, and this is maybe really valuable information for all sorts of providers. What we noticed is that some people really, really, really appreciate getting on the phone with us. They want us to be as hands-on and as supportive as possible. A handful of other people find that to be a little bit invasive. And they're like, well, if you're not my therapist, I don't particularly want to talk to you. I'll share with you anything and everything that would be helpful in connecting me to the right person. But ultimately, if vulnerability is something that's less familiar or a bit intimidating or a little bit scarier, they'd rather communicate through a slightly more anonymized way, like email, where at least there's the voice is limited with us. And then they want to reserve more of the phone and video for the actual provider. So sometimes it's email interactions, sometimes it's phone, sometimes it's a combination of both. It really depends on the person. So we try as much as possible.
Well, what I was wondering is, so how does the matchmaking work? So the people have submitted their information and you have a team. So are the people social workers? Are they clinicians? How do they then go about making the three matches, the three potential matches?
That's a great question. So a lot of the most black and white filtering is facilitated by technology that we've built. So, for example, if someone is available weekday evenings and the provider is only available on weekends, technology essentially filters those out. And similarly with issue area or expertise, if someone is seeking support with an addiction and the provider does not specialize in that or doesn't provide that expertise, they won't be eligible to match, just as a binary yes, no. Then what that does is it whittles the options into people who have the right availability, the right expertise, overlapping identity information. Then our community manager, Kayla, goes through of the available options who's likely to be the best fit, and she facilitates that information sharing with the client and with the therapist. So therapists, in advance of meeting their client, also receive information about what that client's looking for, when they're hoping to start therapy, what they're hoping to work through, what their availability is, so that ideally going into that phone consultation with the client, they're also really well equipped. So it's a combination of technology and human touch application.
Now, is there any cost to the clients who are reaching out to you? Because it sounds like you're spending an enormous amount of time making the matches, going through all the information with your technology and with your team. Do they pay anything for this?
No. So it's completely free for the client, for the therapy seeker. What the seeker, the client, pays is, of course, the fee for therapy itself. And that, one of the things that makes us different is we don't take any amount of money from what's between the therapist and client. So if the client says they can afford $100 for a session of therapy, Every cent of that $100 goes to the therapist. And once the match is made, once they're connected, the therapist and the client go about billing and scheduling as they ordinarily would. We're really supportive in helping the two meet and helping them connect and helping them move forward. So while the client is paying for the therapy, they're not paying for the matching. And we, My Wellbeing, don't earn money from the client. All of the client paying money goes to the therapist like it usually would for therapy.
So unlike Yenta, the matchmaker, there's no follow-up to find out, you know, how are these two actually doing? How is the therapy going? So once you make the match, just for my own clarity, you're basically out of it, out of that original match that's been made.
You asked, how do we keep in touch?
Do you keep in touch?
So after the match is made, we follow up with both sides. We follow up with the client to say, how'd it go, basically, and say, okay, of your three matches, have you had phone consultations with one of them, two of them, all of them? How were those phone consultations? Do one or all three resonate with you? A lot of times, or most of the time, a client will say, you know, they may have had phone consultations with all three and decided to move forward with one. They may have had a phone consultation with one, moved forward with that one, and not had phone consultations with two of the three. They may have not had phone consultations with anyone and felt like, actually, you know, going through this process, I realized that a few other things are important to me, in which case, again, we'd either communicate with them by email or by phone, depending on the person, to see, are there ways that we can better connect them to a better fit? And the beauty of all of that is we're learning every step of the way. If we see that in a given month, A lot of clients are saying, well, I learned that, you know, I really would have loved. So taking your example, I really would have loved to know whether the therapist has written a book, let's just say, right? And say there's 100 people who tell us that, then we would learn, hey, it seems like the clients really need to know this information, and it would be helpful for therapists to be able to share this information proactively. So then we might add a question to our process to say, have you written a book? Yes, no, or what's the link to it, et cetera. And then we would share on the client side, is it important to you that the therapist has or hasn't written a book? And then depending on those answers, that would further filter out. So in your case, it would have prevented that mismatch. So it's really interesting to see, you know, some people have very nuanced preferences or circumstances that would be relatively rare that a lot of people would have that same question or that same want that same thing vetted out. Then there are other things that happen to occur for a lot of people. And the best way to learn, we have found, is through that follow-up. So we follow up to see how it went. And then we also, on the therapist side, we have every single month, we have gatherings and support groups and networking events and learning seminars so that therapists can be connecting with each other and learning, gaining any clinical hours they need to gain or CEUs, but also just letting loose a little bit and resonating and commiserating with other people who understand all the things they're going through professionally. And on the client side, as much or as little as they like, we keep in touch with some of that content that we write and publish in our social media and our newsletter, so that if someone is wanting a little bit of inspiration or a little bit more written guidance or their own commiserating with other people who are hoping to grow or hoping to learn, then they receive that as well, either by email or through some of our platforms.
I mean, it's really an amazing, you know, and I'm not just saying this because now that I'm a part of your, you know, your network. I mean, this is an amazingly wonderful, giving, loving, compassionate, gentle service that you're offering prospective clients and also the therapists, you know, who are a part of the network. And, you know, talking about therapists, this was something I was also wondering about. How do you go about vetting the therapist? Because clearly all therapists are not the same.
Yeah, it's true. That's a great question. And it's one that also, like everything, has changed over time. So my whole thing started with 20 or so of people who I had literally either trained with or learned from, and trained with or trained under, I guess. And I had a really deep trust and respect for their expertise and their ethics. And then I'd say our first 100 to 150 providers who we worked with were all exclusively word of mouth from that early group. So not that that early group knew literally everyone, but it was a little bit of an invite-only system where if someone was referred by someone who we trusted and then someone else was referred by someone who they trusted, there was a foundational understanding of trust. Then when we got to around 150 providers, and for context, we work now with around 275.
Interesting.
It started to be harder for that to be the primary vetting mechanism. And it's worth noting as well, at that time, I myself literally talked to everyone. We probably had coffee when everything was functioning in person. The provider had probably come to one of our gatherings, which at the time was also in person. Now, various team members will talk to providers and various team members will do vetting. So it's all we've had to create a bit more of an internal system so that that can grow. You know, there are only so many hours in the day for one person to talk to everybody. So now we gauge both. It's a pretty interesting combination of years of experience and also measuring how reflective someone's reported experience is with what's documented on their web presence. So practicing self-awareness, practicing accuracy of information that's up online. We validate everyone's license through our onboarding system. and it's worth noting as well that specifically for providers who have state-provided licenses, so social workers are among them. We do work with hypnotherapists, and we do work with some creative arts professionals and music therapists and some coaches who have certifications rather than licenses. And we also are getting relatively regular feedback from, so in terms of keeping in touch with the clients about how the matches went, we get feedback on things like responsiveness and things like professionalism. So we hope and ask that the providers that we're working with are keeping their information up to date so that, for example, if their availability says weekday evenings, they are indeed available at that time so that they're not connecting with clients and then having to schedule and reschedule and schedule and reschedule. We have expectations as far as ethics go as a human and as a professional. So we don't tolerate racism. We don't tolerate othering. We don't tolerate discriminatory speech or condescending speech. So we rely often on the clients who we're working with to flag and let us know if any of that is happening. We're very grateful that it hasn't to date. If there's any complaints that we've gotten, it's been more around tardiness, believe it or not. Any complaints that we've received about our providers would be if the provider was coming late to session relatively regularly. And our response as mental health providers ourselves is usually, thank you so much for letting us know. If you provide us explicit consent, we can and will share this with the provider, but what we actually recommend is that you share it with them because this is really meaty. It's good conversation to have clinically, and you might want to share how that makes you feel, or you might want to ask, is there a reason why that's happening? Or you might want to find a new time that maybe there's less of a rush between sessions. So we always put our clinical hat on first and redirect when there's any possibility that there might be clinical depth to the feedback. We redirect for the client and therapist to talk about it first. There are occasions when the client doesn't feel safe or doesn't feel comfortable doing that, not physically safe, but more that courage-wise or vulnerability-wise. So in that case, with their explicit consent, we would share that feedback with the provider as well, because it's helpful, in our opinion, for the provider to know. And we'll always ask first, hey, we've gotten a piece of feedback. We'd love to share it with you. Would you like that? So we do ask consent on both sides.
Well, I mean, everything is so comprehensive, and I have to let my audience know that you are always accessible. You know, in fact, one of the things that I was laughing to myself was, I mean, whenever I have emailed you or tried to reach you, I mean, you respond within like about a minute. I mean, maybe I'm overstating it a little bit, you know, so hopefully you're finding ways to take care of yourself as you're building, you know, a really amazing and quality business. I hope you have some downtime for yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Believe it or not, I do. I credit our team. We're a small but mighty team, and I really... I'm forever grateful to my team. We all work incredibly hard, and we do protect each other as well so that we each have the time we need to recharge. And as responsive as we are, it's largely because we take tremendous meaning and value in our work as well. And, you know, I think years 1 to 2.5, I would have told you that I didn't have enough time to rest. And now I'm very grateful to say that we're much more well spread, and it's much more sustainable. And through the growth of our team, we've really identified people with incredibly strong character and just really mission aligned. And it's been really powerful.
Well, that sounds wonderful. And are you actually planning to expand to other cities, other states?
We are. We're going to be expanding to other states in as soon as January 21. So we're really excited about that. And part of what's driving that as well is by nature of the content on our social media and on our blog and in our newsletters is resonating, we're finding actually that we're getting more and more therapy seekers from other states already. And we've heard from a few of the therapists that we work with, oh, I connected with someone. They were so wonderful, but they're based in Arizona and I'm licensed in New York. And we're like, wow. And we've disclaimed a few places on our website and in our process that currently we are live in New York. But I can completely understand how if someone is really excited or they're moving forward, you know, they could miss that. And then they could share, these are the things I'm really interested in, this, that, and the other thing. And then before you know it, you're connected and the licensing doesn't map. So we're very excited to expand to different states and be able to help all of those people who are seemingly very excited to get started. So we're excited
well,
to start with
it's a
too.
Very, the whole thing is a very, very exciting adventure for all of us. And I can't believe that the time has come and gone here on the Ask Beauty Show. So the best way, Alyssa Pettersell, for people and therapists and prospective clients and patients to find you is by going
Great
to
question.
My Our Wellbeing, West. Right?
Yes, mywellbeing.com. And on any and all social medias, it's at Find My Wellbeing.
Sounds terrific. Well, listen, it was wonderful talking to you. To be continued.
So good to talk again.
And have a great rest of the day. Thanks so much,
you
Alyssa.
Too. Thank you so
okay,
much.
Take talk care. Bye-bye. Well, I have to tell you, I rarely endorse other therapists, but this is a terrific, terrific business, My Wellbeing, and the CEO and founder, Alyssa Pettersell. So if you are looking for a good therapist, and if your practice is needing some additional patients, My Wellbeing is certainly a place that I would definitely, in great confidence, suggest that you look into. So another hour has come and gone here on the Ask Beauty Show, and I want to thank you all for listening, and I'm going to end the show with my most favorite song, which is What the World Needs Now.